You're listening to UnConcast on the Georgia Podcast Network, featuring unconference sessions and other related discussions from around the Southeast.
In this episode, Jonas Lester leads a session titled The Power of Online Communities at SoCon 07, an unconference which took place February 10th, 2007 at Kennesaw State University.
Great. Can I get this started? In the last session, I had people like rearrange the desks because I kind of hate this staring forward shit because I'm not supposed to be talking. And then it turned out I was talking an awful lot. So, the official title is The Power of Online Social Communities. And then I was asked to put like three bullet points underneath it, and I didn't. Refused. Forgot. Didn't do it. So instead, what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to kick this off for like maybe got about 50 minutes left. If we overdraw a little bit, doesn't matter because everybody else is going on for a smoke afterwards. Anyways, then we go back to the auditorium. Online social communities. That in itself is already, it's like the sword of edge, or the large giant, or the small dwarf. Social communities, there is no community without social. And to call a community social is about as redundant as calling my car a piece of crap. You look at it, you know it's a piece of crap, and you don't have to call it a piece of crap. I just call it my car, and everybody refuses to get in. Where did you get that, Dan Jonas? Oh, we're working out. So, online social communities are the things that were all the hype about 2 years ago. So, welcome to the bus, you're about 2 years late. That was when somebody with, a bunch of hours in the Sociology 101 class or so, decided to call these things social networks, which also led to a very famous, you can find it on YouTube, screaming match between me and the Friendster folks for telling them to call that thing a social network is, presumption of false titles. What these things are communities. So people talking about it. The difference between a social network and a community is that in a social network, I emphasize the connections. I have a lot of attributes that look at the connections, right? Something like, this guy knows this guy over X. He has this feeling about this girl. She thinks that about this. And then there's a community. Community is all about the person in it. A question like, the books you find in my bedroom, or the last TV show I saw, or the last book I read, that's community questions. That's not social network questions. Social network can involve around that, but that's community questions. And I believe what they were wanting us to talk about, or what they were hoping that we would talk about, because there's no wanting in a conference, if we decide to talk about bunnies, and just to spite them, we could do that. We could be talking about bunnies for the next 40 minutes, and then Sherry says, yeah, we had a really great conversation about bunnies, and it's an unconference, live with it.
And we can do that because we're a social community.
Mm-hmm, a social community. If we were an anti-social community, we wouldn't be fighting about bunnies. I really like the one with the big ears. Big ears are suck. What I think they want us to talk about, or the hope that we would talk about, is how those things happen, why they happen, what happens in them. And a lot of people might be, slightly interested in why something was super successful or wasn't. And I'm not the expert on it. Everybody else in this room is the expert on it. I'm just here to start off the whole thing. I like to start these with like small games or things that we do together. And I'm going to ask you a few questions. How many people in this room have a user account on Slashdot? How many read Slashdot? Religiously. See, there's more people who read Slashdot that Slashdot can capture in their database. Next question. How many people in this room play World of Warcraft? Yeah. How many a horde?
I play Guild Wars. Yeah, that's fine.
That would be my next question. Who plays another online game that is not World of Warcraft?
You count social world as games.
Yeah. How many go on forums or use anything that is not the immediate game to talk about the game after they log out of the game?
I did before it got old. But, yeah.
And then I had a child, and it went all down here.
Pretty much, yeah.
So, the one thing that this teaches us is, number one, there are more people that produce the output of a community than can be assessed by just looking inside the community. If you're looking at Slashdot, they've got 160,000 registered users. And then you ask the one question that they don't like being asked. Neither Second Life likes that question, nor Slash likes that question. How many of those people are active? Maybe 500. Okay. How many of those are active and produce postings that are not being rated down? Oh, maybe 100. Okay, so you have 100 people in your registered community. The rest is dead bodies floating around the river. Dead bodies, just like social communities, huh? But then you ask them about how many people read unique IP addresses, read Slashdot every day, and you get huge numbers again. Small group of producers within a community, a lot of people partaking. The second question was, who's playing World of Warcraft? Which, you know, we've just learned about 2 hours ago is this huge MMORPG that 8 million people play. And of all the people in this room, we're tech people. We have a computer at home. We have a technical ability to play this game. A great level of 2 people play. Then we've learned that, 24 million people in the US and 50% of all adults play MMOs. No, 25%. 43% of the 50%. And we got a total of 4. But all 4 of them go, after they stop playing, somewhere else and talk about the game. And this is, I believe, what communities are all about. Communities are ecosystems. Communities don't have defined borders. Any community has influences from the outside. People that read but don't write, that glare in and partake but just taking stuff out of it. And communities don't stand around somewhere in the void with nothing happening around them. There's people who transgress in, and there's people who transgress out to other communities. And that is what a community is. A community is not a forum. A community is not a blog. A community is not a game. A community is not 6 people meeting up to talk about books at Barnes & Noble. A community is it's the name and the likes and dislikes of the people who are in it. And I believe that the people who are asking, how can I build a community, are asking exactly the wrong question. Because they're asking, how can I make people? How can I create living human beings and put them in a community? The question about communities that needs to be asked is, how can I find out where the people are that are interested in what I have to provide and make them, you know, enthusiastic about coming to me to talk about it. That's my start, and I'm pretty sure everybody who came here had some question or another about social communities. There you go. Thank you, sir. Don't make me talk, please. I can't have nothing to take in this place.
And, I mean, I guess my question is how to make a community that is different, because I want to create a local community. We already have a community of, if I ask how many people here have read Career Loafing at least 5 times, probably most people have that are from Atlanta. What we're attempting to do is to harness that into the community of Creative Loafing users and people who love Creative Loafing into an online community that can be interactive. And that's sort of where we're having a difficult time is figuring out what's the best way to go about harnessing the goodwill that the brand has and the loyal readership when printed online, and bringing that to an all, you know, a more interactive online community. And that's sort of why I'm here, to try to get some ideas from other folks on the best way to approach doing that.
Who can help them, man?
What's the form of your online community now? Do you have like bulletin board forums, or
we have our blog, and we have comments on articles. And, you know, those are, especially the comments on articles go pretty well. But that's not, like you were saying, that's not really a community. I mean, we have regular people that go back and forth on the comments and stuff.
Yeah.
But that's not really what we want. We want it to be more stuff like, okay, you know, I know this guy likes this stuff, and he usually agrees with me when he's talking, so what else does he like?
What opportunities are you giving people to put up content of their own, to share their own stuff?
Well, that's sort of why I'm here. I mean, we've got a bunch of ideas we're thinking about doing, but before, you know, we're trying to do due diligence before we do anything, so we don't have to do it and say, okay, that didn't work, and take it down.
We probably can't help you, because everything's different. I mean, you know, try some stuff, I would say, and see what your particular people...
Yeah, if you're afraid of failure, you can't start.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we eventually will, but we want to mitigate failure as much as possible.
Well, what someone else does and works is not going to be the same thing that what works for the creative loafing audience.
Okay. Well, what works for your audience? What is the number one, in the last 6 months, there was one number one hot topic that got the most comments, the people the most riled up? What was it?
Well, there's two things. On an ongoing basis, listings is number one always. People come to find out what to do, where to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's number one always. You know, recently we did an article on BMF, Black Mafia Family, that was huge.
Mm-hmm.
It was a three-part. I mean, that probably generated 800 comments or so.
Why?
Because it hadn't really been written about like that before, and it was a three-parter, and we had a lot of background information. You know, we actually had like police tapes and stuff like that.
Well, I can tell you that, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I can report back to you that I had, with my beta test site, a pleasant experience with one of your creative loafing writers, Jeff Hammond, who's been brought on to write a beer column. I did a test when I put this thing up, only sent out 189 emails, did not go to Jeff Hammond. And somehow through his own offices, he found my blogging site, logged on, threw forward some pithy comments, got some reactions, and through it all, Jeff and I, he's now in our inner circle. And so my answer would be, find people and make them reach out, connect, and join other communities, become aware, and just see where it goes. I embraced Jeff because I recognized, had never met the man, but if he reached out to me first, I'm going to reciprocate.
I can see one obvious thing for something like creative loafing is, some kind of a bulletin board system or something. Well, look how well Craigslist is done. Yeah, that would be a very obvious niche that you guys could do things with. You know, or just have something. Again, the bulletin board software is everywhere, but have forums where people can go and post their own rants about whatever it is that's bugging them in Atlanta, or post that they have a dining room table for sale, or post that they have, whatever. Or, you know, have given them the chance in there to comment on the articles. It's often more persistent than blogs are. You get a different, my observation has been you get a different audience that goes to bulletin board sites than you do that make blog comments. So it's good to have both. But that's an opportunity if it's not something you've tried yet.
Have you guys ever looked at the way in which creative loafing is used?
Yes.
In terms of, like, I know when I read it, I'm usually not at home. I'm usually getting a taco or something because that's where you find it, right? And so it's nice because I have something to read other than the menu, the taco joint, because that gets old. You know, but creative loafing is nice because it's there in the taco stand and wherever, and so you have the ability to just kind of like chill out and read it. Now, when you're at home and you have all this access to other things to do, is the experience the same? So I don't know the answer to this question, but if you guys could create or really look at the way in which your media is used and try to create something like that in a web-based format. You know, a lot of restaurants are starting to have wireless, free wireless now. Everyone's getting free wireless. So can you create some sort of atmosphere where, maybe off the top of my head, you have some way of detecting who else is in the taco joint with you reading creative loafing.
Well, here's an idea. Those hotspots you just mentioned, work out a deal with the restaurants and such where when they log in, yeah, the first page that comes up when they bring up their web browser is creative loafing.
Right. Or a mashup of the establishments page and like a sidebar with the loafing.
Yeah, offer to work that out with them, where you'll do the technology of their proxying and stuff.
From looking at this, it looks almost like the Wave, where I'm coming from. San Francisco has the Wave, which is an independent, or the Bay Area has an independent magazine that is, you know, area topical, but is a little bit over the top. It's not very, it's not very establishment. Let me put it that way.
Good thing. It's not very established.
Yeah, and the Wave had its best success online when we started, and it was a writer for the Wave for a while, and we're competing with the Metro. Metro is not as over the top, a little bit more establishment, but sits in exactly the same damn bin in every McDonald's. That's the problem. And you go out and you have a coffee at Starbucks, and there's the Wave, and next to it is Metro. And we wanted the Wave. I mean, of course. So what we had is the incessant bitching. It was a forum that we set up where we said reviews have to be negative. You cannot write a positive review about any place you went to. You have to be negative about it. If you have a nibble with that establishment, here's the place to put it. Don't write about the good shit, because that invites. That invites people who, you know, the paid blogger. That invites the owner blogging under a different name or writing under a different name. No, this was really you went there, you got wronged, you write about it. And try to be as negative and as nasty as possible. Now, that caveat was right in the front. It said, whatever you read here, read it through the filter that we encourage people to be negative. Whatever you see here, read it through the filter that we don't allow positive stuff. If there's something positive, we'll delete it. Our readership went, the web readership went through the roof. You had to be signed up to be accountable for what you wrote. You could not just write something that wasn't true. You had to be accountable for it. But we had businesses change the way they treated their customers over this. We had mainstream media reports. We had CBS 5 report on it, and so on. And we had people sign up in troughs. We had people subscribe to the actual print magazine. It's free outside the local Starbucks. It costs $20 if you want it to home. Our subscription numbers went from like maybe 150 to over 5,000 because we had the best off in the print. The pre-filter by an editor saying, this is a good one. It doesn't use any swear words, so we can print it. And it reads kind of nice, and it's really, really funny. And, oh my God, nobody's going to go to that pizzeria for a while. And we put it in the magazine. We had to take it out after a while because it is very easy to call somebody a douchebag. It's not very easy to call somebody's food bag. You can get sued over the latter. You can't get sued over the douchebag. So we had to take it out of the print again, and because then at that point you would assume it's only your responsibility rather than if you have it online here, written by somebody else. But that was a huge thing. That was really a huge thing. And the community did not build around us telling people to, you know, congregate and talk amongst themselves. It built around a common cause. And that common cause was sucky restaurants and sucky bars and sucky pubs and I just learned that Rock Bottom originated in Atlanta. I didn't know that. I know only one thing. The Rock Bottom Brewery in Campbell, California is the biggest piece of shit you can go to. And I know that without ever having gone there once. I went there exactly once. I know that from reading a lot of bitches by other people. And I will never, ever, ever go there. But people really love that. And then out of this, because people started talking about things that were not related to the actual restaurant review or venue review, we had to create a second board, a board of off-topic questions. And then we started spinning out boards out of this off-topic thingy when we noticed that the topics started to get more. A good one was somebody had a beef about, somebody wrote about how Kentucky Fried Chicken sucks because pita is cool. Now that's something that doesn't belong in the Kentucky Fried, in the bitching about corporations that belongs into the incessant ramblings by a PETA member. You don't make a board for that. You move it into a general board, and people get really, really interested about that. From that evolved a board about local nonprofits. And that guy is still running there, and he's still, having his beef and everything with everybody, and he's announcing the picketing of McDonald's and the picketing of this, and people come. And to the point where, Craigslist feels threatened by us now, which I don't really understand, but it was pretty cool. That builds community, in my book.
Yeah, actually, we had a thing last year, 99, best thing to do in Atlanta. It was huge. We never even thought about the, 99 worst thing.
worst things to do in Atlanta, have a contest for that? Oh, yeah.
Do you often make the web deeper than the article that Tim created?
Yes.
Okay, and do you find that works?
It depends on the article.
Okay.
And it's really weird. You would think some stuff that would be really resonate does, and some stuff you would think wouldn't does.
I guess I just was thinking of his comment when he reads it while eating the burrito. How do you translate just that are people who are traditionally your print readers to visiting your site and then keep you there?
Well, I mean, that's always the thing. But I mean, we have more online visitors than we do print. Because, I mean, it's pretty heavily audited what our print viewership is. So we know what that is. And, I mean, it doesn't even come close to what our online viewership is. But obviously, we'd like to move to many people.
Where's the future of Loaf? Is it online or is it ink and paper?
It's going to be ink and paper. I mean, ink and paper and online. I mean, more and more of what we're going to end up doing is like we're starting to do is driving people with the print to the online because, you read things now and say, okay, for more pictures of this, go online. For more senior reviews, go online. For a podcast that talks about this topic, go online. So, I mean, it's all print's going to be there for a long time just because of what he said. I mean, it's easy to do if you're sitting out somewhere and to pick up the print, but we obviously want to try to.
My view of a major advantage there is that online you can give people the opportunity to submit their own CD reviews and their own movie reviews and whatever. And then you find the ones who are good at it, that you can discover people online that way, that maybe then you ask them if they want to do some stuff for print.
Editorial is to
well, it's an idea, though.
Yeah.
You said that the events is one of the big attractions. Yeah. Do you have any sort of feed so that someone can say, I'm interested in this type of music, and they get a...
We're looking at doing that, and we are going to do that. We started to do that probably last year, and it ends up being more complicated to do it well than we thought it was going to be. It's really easy a topic to think about, okay, we're going to do that, but then when you actually start looking, okay, how are we going to do that and make it good, it's more difficult than I originally thought it was going to be.
Well, I think that's what people are interested in getting, then that's why for you to, be a part of their daily or weekly.
I can tell you, one of the big reasons that makes it hard is the number one search in listings is show me everything for this particular set of dates without any... I mean, we have a whole bunch of topics you can choose from if you want to break it down, but the number one thing people, by far, is just show me everything you got for this weekend or this Tuesday, or this week.
Do you allow people to go and review the show afterwards? Mm-hmm.
What the heck?
No.
You should.
If your listings are your biggest things, why not allow people to come in and say how the show was?
Right, and the next time the band comes,
exactly,
check out the reviews.
Exactly, and then you'll get two people debating.
Especially on recurrence, if you have these DJ events. DJ John spins seducing tunes every Monday at the, next Monday you should be seeing what the Monday before was written. And the one thing, and this is in that particular community, I guess, it's more important because you are a media organization, you are pretty much traditional plus print plus new online media, is you will get, and this completely transcends anything we were supposed to talk about, but you will get into a position where you have to editorial defend yourself, where you will be held accountable for something that somebody writes that is not on your staff. So the legal coverage of that is hugely important. And the second thing is, make space for retractions. You need it. We all need them. But it's not, this is the thing. Even if you have every 4 weeks a correction to print. Even if after every 4 weeks you have to allow some business owner or some DJ John who's spinning seducing tunes a chance to respond to criticism, even if you have to do that, that alone creates more community than the, as I said last hour, the adoption of something that doesn't exist is zero. Anything above that is better. And if you only get 15 people to use that particular feature for 5 days, then you get 15 people. That's an increase of 15 people. That's a lot.
Let me see if I can shove the conversation in another direction. So we've been talking about how to evolve or how to create a community around something that's already there. We've got a paper, it's established, and we all know it. I'm here more interested in communities that are sort of self-generating and maybe around an idea, but not, there's no infrastructure backing it up. I'm a political hack in the room, and so the race basically started a couple weeks ago for 2008, and candidates on both sides of the aisle are having little local groups form up, and they get together at Mango's Tavern, they have beers, and say, we should do something. But I'm curious, how do we use communities to get people to do things in the real world and then feed that back into the online community? Is there a feedback mechanism that keeps people involved around the topic or a...
Since Meetup started charging, obviously, it kind of went south.
Right.
Is there anything that has replaced it?
Evite. Unfortunately.
There's upcoming.org, which is kind of a different model than Meetup, but it's probably the closest thing I've seen.
Well, and Upcoming is actually a lot more Web 2.0 to throw the term out. I mean, because you can, it uses tags and it uses geodata, and it's how you go to
Upcoming.org.
Yeah. Are they the ones too that where you can actually tell a performer you want them to play in a particular city? There's a site
That's not Upcoming. That's the other one.
That's I'm trying to remember their name. Jonathan Colton uses them, and a few other folks too. There's one that. Yeah, you can actually, if a performer is listed there, you can actually tell them, I want you to play in my city.
Yes. It's kind of like those political websites, draft so-and-so.
So the one thing about politics is every time I hear this in 2008, where people start thinking about this again, is that I have nothing but pity for civic space, who kind of died over the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm a good friend of Chris Messina, so I was friends with Neil Drum, and I'm friends with Chris Messina. So I was friends with the people who started it. And I was in the Drupal community when Civic Space spun off. But they missed the boat. They could have been here now and today and done this all. But I just did a new event. Is there a... No, there's no force somebody to invite.
What is this space to?
This is a really good question. We had
it's
this
a way you can
web
announce that there's going to be
transcending into the real life,
a given location,
and
then you can have it
working on the web, and then
scheduling
something that happens outside. The other way around doesn't exist. It really does not exist. I've got 15 people sitting in a bar every Monday pitching about the current about the president. How can I give them an online home? That doesn't exist. And I guess the reason it doesn't exist is that the tools are there, but nobody uses them.
Yeah. Okay. Well, even in just in terms of using simple stuff like MySpace and organizations, in terms of the failure or the closing down or the cutting off of Meetup because it has a cost associated with it, I've noticed a lot of groups just decide, well, rather than pay Meetup, you can pay $8 to GoDaddy and a real cheap, hosting account somewhere for $5 a month, get some donations. People are just using their own websites. But I'm just trying to think of, what are the mechanisms that we can use online? I know what the Loaf does with their MySpace page is you randomly pick, 16 people that you put in your top friends. And, people like that little sort of cookie Like, if you come to a meeting, you know, we're going to take your picture and put you on the website. You're like, ooh, I want a website.
Right.
And you might come to your next thing.
You might try Google.
Or, like, look at the Wednesday Night Drinking Club.
You might try Google Base, too, because they're starting. Actually, I know this because Google came to us to do this. Google is starting a thing where pretty soon you're going to see on the page, if you type in a restaurant or the algorithm thinks you want to go to a event, you're going to get a new type of thing that'll be on top. And they're going to, if you use that for your continuing search, it's just going to pull from people who have submitted things to Google Base. So they're creating in themselves an event database that people can submit things to. And there's calendar, and there's, on the Google Calendar, like if you type in something, it's going to search all the other Google Calendars for that particular thing.
If they agree to make it public.
Democratic, Republican, whatever in Atlanta, you would name it, you know, you would have it on a calendar. If anybody searched it, was it Google Calendars, it'll pull up your calendar of events.
There's an, have you looked at iMeme any before? iMeme is this place. You're using a Mac, so you're kind of SOL. They stopped Mac support for that. But
I'll just have to install it.
iMeme.com. They've got the web component is relatively strong, but they also have a desktop component with it. What it does is it has these groups that build themselves around interests. Let's take one that's have the Mac group. Here you go. And so you've got your membership here. You can add photos. You've got forums. You can upload music or any kind of, you know, sound data. I'm using the groups that that I've been working on. I deleted them all because I don't support people who don't support Macs. And videos. What it doesn't have is event information. Which kind of sucks for something like yours. Kicking their butts, they're in Palo Alto. They're right around the corner from me, so I can kick their butts if you want me to. But it's really what they do is they aggregate all these information that happens outside of the web, and you get to aggregate it onto the web.
Yeah. Well, that brings up another question to me, and this was kind of touched on a bit in the discussion this morning, that, you know, there's all of these sites where you can create networks. Like, there's this one, there's the Crowdvine one that the guy was showing off this morning. There's tons of little sites that make it easy to put together a network of people. How do you then get the word out about that network? I mean, you know, putting up a page on iMeme, you know, the Mac one has 9 people in it. If they want more than 9 people, what are they going to do?
Pretty sure there's a bigger Mac one too.
Well, yeah. Well, then, okay. Then there are
a Mac, and the first one is viruses. Yeah.
Well, okay. There are 2 sites on the same website then about Macs. Why are there 2? And what is it between? What's the difference between them? Why did someone form one if there was already one there?
What's incontinence? Too many websites.
Well,
I mean,
perhaps in this case there's multiple because Apple has not provided the opportunity for that community themselves. But people perhaps, if Apple facilitated open community.
Well, Apple has discussion boards on their site just as well as anybody else.
Discussion boards, yes. Do they have that? I mean, there's clearly something that makes people want to go there, whether it's openness or they just don't want to go to the Apple site. Maybe
you can find
that.
You can form groups.
If you have the right openness and the right opportunity.
I have completely different focuses. Like, I don't want to go to the general, like, iMovie discussion group or some general discussion group. I want to go to a developer group specifically talking about Cocoa. You know, Cocoa. You know, so that could be the thing is, I mean, be specific about what your thing is. I mean, that's the big problem. That's what you're going to run into when you start posting things on the calendar. If you just say, you know, there's a Republican meeting group or a Democrat meeting group, that doesn't tell me anything. Be specific. What are you getting together to do? What's my action item? What's going on in this group? What's the group for? And I think there's too many groups that are too broad and too general and don't tell me what you are and what you want me to do.
That's a good point. Specific is a good way to succeed.
If you're the 9 guys who are meeting at a cafe every Friday, that's your topic.
Right.
Yeah. It's the website for the 9 guys who are meeting at a cafe every Friday. in absence of a real world already existing connection, you gotta be very explicit about it, yeah. But I think, you know, especially for that, you've got these small action groups already going. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. Political parties already have huge networks to reach out to pretty much every member. If you're just registered Democrat or registered Republican, you already had your mail saying, hey, we expect you to be there on Friday to talk to your to your handler.
Let's see, nonprofit interest groups in general.
Yeah.
I mean, PETA could be people like plushies, I don't know.
But the plushies don't do that. They kind of need to yip and, what's this, yipping and scratching. but that's a furry, so.
Or, you know, a chess player.
Yeah.
Okay, like how.
Yeah.
So we have social groups too.
But they.
Well, what are they using now? I mean, is there anything that's already existing? Anything in any other medium? Is there. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they're, it's an organic thing, so they're probably doing something somewhere. How. There's also, you know, to find them and direct them. Whether it's in print or in books or
yeah.
magazine or newspaper.
A lot of groups are still mailing out newsletters
mm-hmm.
to them.
Well, I'm still just kind of, you know,
mm-hmm.
trying to bounce around the question. Like, there are social, online social communities out there, like MySpace and Facebook and whatever. Like, what do you do with them? Like, we're saying power of social communities. What is this power? What do we do with them?
I don't think there's power. That's
yeah.
that's the big lie.
In MySpace, you try and add 10,000 random people to your friends.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, like once.
That's why I hate it.
When my group president told me a year and a half ago we should make a MySpace page, I said that's just I don't want to do that. It's a bunch of people who are like, you know, blinging up their comments page and then going out and spreading online social disease. It's a real world. but. A year and a half later, I've kind of been proven wrong. Lots of people are using MySpace somewhat effectively. One dumb thing that I realized was that I wasn't using it right because I didn't like all the flashy crap that people, you know, can muck up their MySpace page with. But if you give them flashy crap that has a message in it, you can actually use it. And people do a copy-paste thing. They love to propagate these things. And so the trick is you've got to sell out to the model of MySpace, which is, you know, stroke their ego. Give them something they can copy and paste, and make it funny and loud and jumpy. And if you sneak a message in there, then they might actually do it. You know, if you post a bulletin, maybe nobody reads it, but you know, you start with like, tonight somebody is going to get laid at Gordon Beer's. You know, they're like, what? Oh, damn. It's a happy hour. Well, I guess I'll go to that. You know,
well, and then you're trying to how to get them to do something. I mean, as you pointed out, you can incentivize them, or you can at least guide them. I mean, you know, they talk about doing something, but they don't do anything. You know, have they been given guidance to do it? Is it relevant to them? It's hard to filter relevance on MySpace. That's kind of one of the gaps there, right? I mean, if you're a member of a group, what do they want to do? Are they a member of your group to go to events? Are they a member of a group to go volunteer for candidates? Do they just want to do stuff in an office or make phone calls?
I think it might help you to maybe give them a playground. And by that I mean, you know, you hear a lot of talking about remixing media.
Mm-hmm.
And I work for TechLinks. And one of the things I'm working on for TechLinks is kind of innovating the format of the press release. A press release, everyone's sick of the press release, you know, leading company, right, it's all bullshit. There's like four sentences in every press release, and that's all you need to bullet point. And then, in this social, what we're calling it a social media press release, then you have, you know, Technorati links and Dig links and everything, and you give them a podcast and a video, and you basically give them a bunch of different media for them to take and remix any way you want. You know, a good example is like what Colbert did with his little lightsaber video. You know, he gave someone some media and let them remix it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
say Frank, you know, he's got all kinds of that content with his little sports
right. Right. So I mean, it's kind of like a press kit, but you give people the ability, you give some people some building blocks and let them play with. Now, this takes a little bit of trust on. You know, traditional politicians may not like someone playing, you know, making their own political advertisement with the politician in there. It'll take some getting used to, you know, but I mean, people like to remix media. They have fun doing it.
Was it Chrysler? Which car company was it that tried this? They let everybody basically dub their own commercials. Yeah, GM was doing it for some SUV, and basically what they ended up with was 1,000 commercials of everyone saying how much that SUV sucked.
SUVs in general, actually.
Yeah, but that's, yeah, and that kind of backfired on them because they created this playground, and what they didn't realize was that nobody wanted their message.
How harmed were they by that?
They just didn't put the commercials out. So,
I brought this example last hour, but excuse me if you've already heard it. Microsoft brought the Zune player up.
Yeah.
And they thought they were very smart. What they thought they would do is they would get other people to sell the player for them. And the way they would do it is they would pay money and give out prices and that kind of stuff for people who take pictures of the Zune in the most extraordinary environments. So, for example, jump out of an airplane and take a picture of your Zune while you're jumping. Turns out the Zune explodes if you do that because of the change of pressure. But
that would be a good picture.
That would be great. The picture had a crack.
Yeah.
Go on a 40-mile hike and take a picture of your Zune every mile, which song it's playing right now, or something like that. So Microsoft thought that's a good idea. Now let's make a bunch of forums and give people an ability to post a picture and write about it. What did people do? In absence of existing support forums, they used those linked off the main Microsoft website. There's forums to bitch about how much the Zune sucks. From people showing little movies, there was, you had the ability to either post a picture or post a movie or link a YouTube movie of them taking a sledgehammer to their Zune. There was a some artist who took like 5 Zunes and blew them up with C4 somewhere in the Philippines. You know, if you are a company that tries to get an enthusiastic user base, that tries to sell something, imagine if you give people a voice. It's the 12 Angry Man syndrome. We were talking about that. That's not where I get. If you give 40 people, if you put 40 people into a room, say, hey, here's your topic. I'll give you a random topic and then I'll walk out. The chances are much higher that it will start bitching about the topic and it will start cheerleading on topic. And so I believe that any creation of community is predicated on the, whatever happens in that community happens. And the only thing I can do to make that, a positive experience for me is not to expect anything, but rather to cater to the expectations of the people that come in. Now, that's a hard lesson to learn for political parties because, let's look at the last election. There is the sugar daddy of Democrat progress, Howard Dean. He is the man. And then he starts a little squealing, right? And the next thing you know, the Howard Dean forums, the place where people were talking about how cool Howard Dean is, are full of MP3 remixes of the Dean screen. And if I had been Howard Dean or one of his advisors or whatever, I would say, dude, that's great. That rocks. Next thing we do is we buy airtime. We take all our money, we buy airtime. A black screen, we call it the Dean screen. We play one of the good MP3s, and in the end, we'd still say Howard Dean for president. And I guarantee you that guy would have gotten more votes than Kerry. No questions about it. If the problem about these communities is, or any kind of, communities, is that people perceive the community to be the medium that this thing exists on. So my community is a forum. No, your community are the people on the forum. The forum is just a facilitator. And then they get really, really angry if the community is doing what the forum is programmed to do. Because you can't delete a line out of your community and make the community talk different. And, Microsoft learned that the hard way. It's like, hey, we will build a community and we will call it Why Soon is Cool. And everybody's like, no, it's not. Yeah.
But what's a good example of a website or a community that's robust and engaging and all of that? I mean, we talk about those that have had problems. What's a good example?
And can I tag on to that? And can you give us examples of platforms that we could use to build those kind of communities?
Amazon user.
Amazon?
For me, the Amazon user those are action items for me. I'll go through and I'll read probably 15, sometimes 20 of the reviews of different types of products, and that'll help me make my decision.
Help inform that decision. That
And how many of those are angry invectives against Amazon?
No, they're all
no,
they are all reviewed.
Okay. I would say, I mean, same thing for like a toy site. I don't have kids, but I'm shopping for my niece and nephews. So you're reading what mothers who had their kids use it and saying how well their kid liked it helps me decide to buy it for my niece.
CNET reviews as well.
Yeah, it's already loading. It's
okay.
A little slow.
And what's the platform? Is there the Plague? Is that the clone enabler for Dig?
Yeah, Plague, right. Plague.org. Is it Plague.org?
Can you go to Slashdot and show her the bottom of the software that was built on?
It's his own. It's Slashdot.
That's what I was telling you.
Slashdot, they wrote their own. Slashdot pretty much started when, see, this is exactly, here is the number one proof that the software does not determine the community. Slashdot was written by a guy who couldn't code. It sucked donkey balls. It was one of the worst software ever written. However, it is, if people talk about Slashdot, everybody knows immediately what it's all about. And now, you know, they come out of the woodworks asking, hey, how can I replicate the Slashdot effect? All I have to do is write Slashdot software, right? No, you don't. The software is really not what it's all about. And, I mean, look at Amazon. Amazon is a good example for it. They've put openness, maybe that's the wrong thing to click on it.
Yeah.
Let's make something else.
Well,
it's Valentine's Day, that's all I get. Well, okay, what's more sexist? The suggestion that any guy wants a freaking coin up in his house, or the lingerie. Anywho, so here's the reviews, right? The reason they can do this without any problems is they have no expectations of you being nice to Amazon, because nobody's talking about Amazon, and they have no expectations of whatever you're going to talk about that product. If that product sucks, Amazon doesn't give a flying hoot. If you don't like it.
Well, as you pointed out, they filter. So if you are talking about Amazon, that comment's not going to go up.
Yeah. Yes.
And they do filter. I mean, if you don't like a product, they do filter it. I guarantee it.
Do they?
Yes.
If you start just spouting profanity about the whole thing.
No, you don't even have to do that. They do filter.
I mean,
if you don't like the product.
I read a lot of Amazon reviews, and I see probably... I mean, I know I see just as many negative reviews.
It has to be constructive about the product,
yeah,
and then they'll allow it.
Yeah.
But if it's just a screen...
Well, what's the famous example?
They do. I don't know. No one understands what the criteria is, but they do filter negative reviews. They do. And they don't have any gene room.
Well, you're familiar with, like, the Anne Rice rant. You're familiar with that one, right? That someone, one of Anne Rice's latest books... Yeah, you know, this was about 2 years ago, I think. But someone, you know, there are a lot of negative reviews being posted on Amazon of her book. Anne Rice comes back, and she posts in the reviews section of Amazon this two-page-long screed against everyone who hates her book and how stupid they are and how wrong they are and how they don't understand what she's trying to write at all. It destroyed her reputation in a lot of literary communities just because she argued back with these critics.
The Jesus book.
When you're talking about,
I think it was Mednock the Devil or something.
So when you're talking about virtual communities and how they play a role in content communities,
it's one of the vampire books.
I think we cannot escape reading Howard Rheingold and his early book, Virtual Communities, which started this whole discussion. But one good strategy, I believe, is smart mobbing, which was the subject of his 2001 book. It was called Smart Mobs. And how folks are actually getting together in communities just by using gadgets such as cell phones and the text messages in cell phones, without knowing one another. You know, huge crowds have been formed on various occasions in Philippines, in Japan, in a number of Asian countries, as well as in the States. Okay, I think smart mobbing is the way to go in corporate communication, to sell products, but I don't see any of these forums really discussing that potential. I don't know what you folks think about that.
Could be a good means for the political activism.
Just talked about it, whenever you have a good community going, some killjoy is going to come in and tell you you can. So, what do you want?
I was going to say, remind everybody to meet downstairs for our last group hug.
Oh, shall we? Light the patchouli. We shall be on our way forth.
Yeah, I'm really interested in that. The killjoys, the ones who come in and just want to make a mess. How do you deal with them?
You don't. You don't.
You let them scream themselves out.
You let them scream themselves out. The cool thing about communities is that there's this 90-10 90-10 kind of thing. And more often than not, without realizing, we might be one of the 10%. We might just not be the constituents for that community. As much as we want to be a constituent for that community. That is the, you go to Slashdot and you write a lengthy, very, very thought out, very, very thoughtful response to some innocent rant about why Perl is cool and Python sucks. And you sit there and you run your tests and everything, and they vote you down. Said, the other 90%, they suck. No, you're just not part of that community. You're too brainy, or you're too left, or you're too right. Or you're too male, or too female, or too black, too white, too Jewish, too Christian for that community. No matter how much you want to be part of that community, and I think that is really that. No community tolerates intruders. Intruders are usually dealt with rather swiftly, especially in online communities where the anonymity plus online equals jerk, right? That's the online equation. Once that happens, people will get very, very, communities, once you have a baseline, will get very protective of their communal culture. And if you have somebody come in and scream and rant and whine, they'll leave. They won't be made left. You don't have to moderate them. Howard Rheingold had, the problem that I see with Howard Rheingold is that he had an anecdotal thing. A very anecdotal thing, and that is about when he was talking about the smart mobs. That is somebody using novel technology and micro information to organize huge movements. And that's great. We do the same thing today with dodgeball. I don't know if you guys have seen dodgeball before. Dodgeball, we do it with Twitter, which is almost like dodgeball. We do it with Flickr. We do it with, is there actually one in Atlanta?
Yeah.
Yeah, I really recommend dodgeball. It's pretty cool.
Basically, you can sign up your cell phone to it, and then if someone is going to have a get-together at some restaurant in 20 minutes, then they can just put it on there, and suddenly everyone gets plinged on their cell phone that there's a thing going on in 20 minutes.
Okay. You can also, since it is location-aware by your own declaration, you can do things like, I have a crush on, and your phone will start buzzing if she's nearby or he's nearby. So that's the getting the younger crowd in, but for me, it's really, all my friends are using it, and if I'm still at work and I get 5 pages that people are showing up at the Duke of Edinburgh, which is my place, I'm going to go to the Duke of Edinburgh. Yeah. So, but that's really what it's all about. I think what Howard had, and an anecdotal thingy, happens all over the world. And that is that we're inherently interested in meeting other people, we're inherently interested in hooking up, we're inherently interested in communicating. And we are human beings. We're like, our species kind of made it all the way to the top, not because we're the smartest or the fastest or the coolest, but just because we communicate an awful lot. And just by giving people a chance to communicate, give them some venue to communicate, and they will communicate. There is no question like that. Let me rant and I will rant. Let you rant and you will rant. If you get people to listen, people will talk. And setting up a website, not that hard. Whether you let somebody else do it for you and you sign up for it or you do it yourself, really not that hard. The community happens if the community wants to happen. And the only thing that can then kill the community is you not being attentive to their needs. Let them talk and give them what they need to talk. So in other words, you need a community manager that listens a little bit to people bitching about the fact that the text entry might not be good or stuff like that. But communities happen by themselves. You don't make communities, you just support them. It's after 3 o'clock, we gotta go down there. Smell the patchouli. Thanks for coming, guys.
Interested in podcasting? Want to mingle with other podcasters or learn how to get started yourself? Then mark your calendar for PodCamp Atlanta, happening March 16th through 18th at Emory University. For more information and to add yourself to the registration list, visit podcampatlanta.com. And by the way, it's free.
The song you heard in this podcast was Garden by Cargo Cult, available only on magnatune.com. Thanks for listening to Unconcast on the Georgia Podcast Network. If you have recorded or are planning to record a discussion that you think would make a good episode of UnConcast, email us at info@gapodcastnetwork.com to learn how you can submit it.